Welcome to the 37th episode of the Board Game OK podcast, a podcast about board games and the hobby of board gaming. Recorded in sunny and yes, it is summer properly, Helsinki, Finland. I'm your host, Luis, and with me is my co-host, Joonas.
Hello, Ray.
In this episode, we're going to talk about the top games of the first half of 2026. The first half is gone, and that means that we're revisiting our gaming for this first half of the year. While checking, and I've been a bit better in my board game stats this last year, I think, and particularly this last half a year, I checked and I noticed that we haven't played that much together, Joonas.
Yeah, I have the list here of the players that I've been playing the most with from the past 6 months. You are on spot 8.
Yeah.
You are usually right after Chill every time. You have done so badly.
I have done so badly. I think you have done so badly at not inviting me. No, I think there has been also like several situations that I managed to not either make it to Thursdays or make it to Sunday gaming. It has been a bit hectic first half year. However, I've done plenty of board gaming with other people as well. So I have a list that I was able to create a list for this first half of 2026. But I also noticed that I did not game as much as I would have liked to. Or maybe my variety of gaming was also not that big.
Mm-hmm. My past 6 months were also, well, I wouldn't say that I had less gaming. I gamed less with people other than Chilla.
Yeah.
There was a lot of just me and Chilla playing games. I think there were a lot of business things happening this spring. I had to skip a lot of Sunday games, a lot of the meetup games, and I just ended up playing a lot with Chilla. So a lot of two-player games this 6 months.
Okay, but before we go and talk into what's the top 10 of 2026, let's first talk about the worst game that you played.
Oh.
The worst gaming experience, Joonas, that you had.
No. Before we get to the worst one, should we tell the listeners why we are doing the list this way?
Oh, well, we have said that in the past. You mean like for the new listeners?
Yes, because usually when I at least start listening to a new podcast, I look for those top 10 lists, something to give me an indication of the tastes of the hosts to see how much value should I put for their opinions. And that's already one value proposition. That's one reason for doing the top 10, just for you, the listener, to see, hey, or hear, what are our tastes like, me and Lewis's tastes, so you know whether you should trust our opinion or not.
Yes. So this is one reason why we're doing that. We have still not decided to do a top 100 or top 50. We have started doing top 10 lists in an interesting way this last half a year, and maybe even at the end of last year, we did the top 10. So then, in order to get to a consensus, we decided, like, hey, one way of sharing our opinion was to say, like, hey, the top 10 gaming experiences of the last half a year. And that way, we're not giving our opinion in general. We are setting it in a time so that we also, like, hey, these are actually the games that we did play.
Yeah.
And therefore, if we play them, that means either we like them or they're getting to the table and it's just a game that I played 7 years ago and I still like because I have fond memories of it.
Yeah, because that's the typical type of material you see in other people's top 10, top 50, top 100 lists. Games they played a lot when they were in college, haven't touched that game in 10 years.
Yeah.
And they have so many great memories, but they can't really recommend it necessarily to anyone. Or if they would now play it for the first time, would they really have a cute time with that?
Yeah.
Also, then a lot of plenty of games that they say are really good, but when was the last time you played it? Then you play new games, which you get very jaded off.
Yeah.
You might be one of those people who says, like, all the new games are really bad. People did it really well 5 years ago. And the games from 5 years, 10 years past, those are the cute ones. Are you still playing them?
Yeah.
Are you revisiting them with fresh eyes? Are you just disliking games in general now more? So this is our like recent opinion. I would like to say we are anchoring these lists to our realities instead of living in our fantasy worlds when we are playing games with our college friends and having the bodies of 24-year-olds where we could just stay up until 4 a.m. and wake up next day and go to school or to work and everything would be just fine. But you can't do that anymore.
You cannot do that anymore. No, you have to. You have to settle down to the reality of playing now with just Chilla sometimes.
Yeah. If you would ask me to start playing Twilight Imperium at 6 o'clock and then we would finish at 4 a.m. I think it would take me maybe 9 days to physically recover from the sleep deprivation that I have experienced.
Indeed. So this is why we have the list confined to a specific point in time, which is the first half of 2026. Now that we have explained the reasoning of our list, could we go to the worst game, the worst experience of 2026 first half?
Yeah.
What was your worst experience, Jonas, gaming this first half of the year?
Yep. So I could do a very easy cheap shot at Rick and Morty Total Recall card game, but I'm not going to do that. I picked a game that has a score of 7.6 on BGG from 2025. It's called Tea Witches. Have you heard about it?
I've heard about it. I have not played it.
So Tea Witches, you're a witch making tea in a fantasy setting. I have three complaints. Complaint number one, it was a 3-hour game, not including the teach. I did not enjoy that, given the lack of interaction in the game and just the general dullness of the contract fulfillment of the game. Complaint number two. So every round of Tea Witches starts by you drawing cards from your personal deck, which represents the different guests that are coming to your tea boutique. And there's two copies of every guest in that deck. If you draw the same card twice, and by the way, you just have to keep drawing. Oh, you don't have to actually keep drawing. You can draw one, and then you can draw two, and then you can kind of choose like, oh, do I want to draw more? Should I, you know, not draw more? The more you draw, the better your turn round will be. But of course, if you bust, then that's really bad.
Mm.
But I think you had to draw three or something like that. Well, in any case, I busted two rounds back to back really early on. I was like, okay, well, I guess I'm going to have a bad turn. There was another player who did not bust at all. They had a really great game, a lot of points. Yep. And if you get a good draw, you have more chances in the game to trash those duplicates. You can remove them from the game, which I saw. I was complaining about this somewhere online. And then someone said that, hey, but you know, you could actually play strategically and you could trash those duplicates from the deck. And I went, do you think I'm five? Do you think I'm playing a deck builder for the first time? Of course I knew I have to trash those duplicates. I know how deck building works, but I couldn't do it because I busted. I didn't have a single chance in the game to do it. So if you have a bad draw, you're going to end up having more bad draws. If you have a good draw, you end up having a lot of good draws. And combine that with the 3 hours, ugh. Taverns of Tiefenthal has a similar kind of mechanic where you draw guests and then you kind of draw until you fill up your pub or your tavern. I like that game. It works really well there. And I think the reason why it works is that you can do a lot of deck manipulation there. You can also manipulate your tavern to do that stuff. You rarely feel that, oh, I just had like a really bad draw. Well, you do sometimes, but then you just get over it.
So you feel there was too much luck. Is that what you're saying? That there was too much luck in this game?
Oh.
That affected you negatively?
No, I don't mind luck. I don't mind that someone got lucky and I didn't get lucky. I mind the fact that a game where the most fun you're going to have is the more you can engage with the mechanics. And the game just said, oops, you had bad luck. Actually, you're not going to have such a fun time playing these Tea Witches. Because I can't interact with other people. So, of course, I want to just play with my board. But I can't really play with my board that much because I had a bad draw. Okay. Last complaint. I'm sorry. I'm really taking a long time with Tea Witches. I'm sorry, Luis, beforehand for your edit duties. So complaint number three. The theme of Tea Witches doesn't matter. Okay. I do find that the art by Sandara Tang, she has done some other games. I think Flamecraft is illustrated by her. I do find her art, for me, saccharine. Overly cutesy. But that's me. So and I don't gravitate towards fantasy settings. So I have like a bad bias here. But I was ready to be a cute tea witch, and I did nothing in the game that made me feel like a cute tea witch. Let me tell you what your life is like as a tea witch. You don't care what tea you serve. There's these tea resources, which are just colors. This tea is red. This tea is green. This tree is yellow. It doesn't matter. It's all the same tea. None of the different teas you serve have any actual distinction. There's no tea that's a little bit harder to get, but it's also good. There's no tea that's actually really good, but most of the people won't appreciate the differences. It's just all water with different colors. That's all it is. Then you put toppings in your tea. but you don't know what those toppings are called. It's some eye, some tooth, some spider. The teacher of the game didn't explain to us that, oh, these are sweet teeth that you can put in your tea. These are eye cubes. These are booba bugs. Most of the game, I was going, I have to do this tea. I guess I need a tooth to fulfill this contract here. And I had no idea what that tooth was thematically. Am I giving it to the guest? Am I saying, you know, is that coming from my mouth? Is it going into the tea? I had no idea. And at some point, we asked the other players, we asked, like, what are these things? And then we learned that these are actually toppings that you put into your tea as you serve them. Now, this is not the fault of the teacher. This is the fault of the theme or the lack of it. Okay, games like Tea Witches are supposed to be this counterforce to the themeless beige trading in the Mediterranean games. But I think this game goes to show that when some people say something is themeless, what they mean is, I don't like how this is illustrated, or I don't like historic settings. Give me a Tea Witch game that makes me actually feel like a tea witch. That's it. Sorry for the rant.
Yeah. I, after that explanation, don't feel any inclination to play the game called Tea Witches. So thank you for your rant.
Yeah. Also, if someone is having fun out there with Tea Witches, yes, you are having fun the wrong way. But joking aside, if you enjoy the game, enjoy the game. That's perfectly fine.
Just don't bring it to my house.
I just have an opinion about
it. All right. So after that very heated opinion, I'll have maybe not equally heated, but my worst experience of 2026, first half at least, is Insider. The game of 20 questions where you're trying to find the person that... Do you know the game?
Like, yeah. I can't believe this is going to be your worst game.
So we had the chat about Meetup, right? And how sometimes in Meetup you are forced to play games that you don't really feel like playing.
Yeah.
I think this is one of those games that should never be brought to the Meetup ever again.
Yeah, and I think I cut you in the explanation, or did you cut yourself in the explanation?
Yeah, so it's like, it's. I think the game that is similar to it is called 20 Questions, mm-hmm. where you're basically trying to find a word by asking questions to a person that is the explainer or whatever, and they can only answer yes, no, or maybe. And just answer with these chips that they just say yes, no, and they give it to people. Like you ask a question, you give a chip that whether the answer is yes or no. And I think you have a couple of like maybe chips that you can use every now and then. But in general, I think once the chips are over or the time is over, then the team has until that time to guess the word. If they don't, they lose. If they win, they also have to find who was the insider. Because among the people that are asking questions, there's one person that knows the word. And they have to, I think they have to help the team, but in a way that is not obvious that it's them, that is the insider. Because if they get chosen as the insider by the person that was like supposed to give the clues, then they lose.
Okay.
Isn't that so?
So I have played Werewords, which is an implementation of Insider.
Oh yeah, I'm confusing Werewords with Insider.
Yeah, because in Werewords, there is that evil player.
Yes.
That knows the word, or I don't know if they know the word.
Yes.
And they just try to spend the questions.
Yes, that's...
So people are getting close to the word that might be apple. And then I go like, hey, we're thinking about this the wrong way.
Yeah.
Luis, is it a building?
Yeah.
Then you're going to be like, no, it's not a building.
Yeah.
And I thought Insider was the exact same game that Werewords then kind of like took and rethemed it.
Yeah, okay, yeah, so no, it's a little bit different. I was confusing, the chips are from Werewords. So this one doesn't have chips. However, the insider is trying to help the team, I think.
Oh, you say you think. Did you play this game or not?
I played this game so many times, but now I'm confusing it. The point is like, the word has to be guessed correctly. And then afterwards, everybody has to discuss and guess who the insider was. If they guess who the insider was, they win the game together. If they do not guess who the insider was, the insider wins. So the insider has to help the team guess the word well enough that the word is guessed, but also vaguely enough so that people do not know that they are the insider because they are trying to win separately from the team. And the team wants to guess the word and then find out who the insider is. So there's no bad person here. That's what I was confusing. The chip thing is actually the werewords thing.
Yeah, and I'm reading the description. Yes, in werewords, you have two roles. You have the werewolf that knows the word but is trying to work against the team, and then you have the seer that knows the word and tries to work for the team.
Yeah.
And of course, neither of them want to be identified.
Yes.
And I guess with insider, you just don't have the werewolf.
The werewolf. You have the seer or the insider, and they don't want to be identified.
All right. So what's so bad about this game?
It wasn't like, it's a game that I can imagine working in any other setting.
Can I just like preface this?
Yes.
I think werewords is really heckin' good.
I think both games are fantastic.
Okay.
But the experience of playing these games in the meetup with people that have played it multiple times and have seen the cards and know which questions to ask.
Oh, that's horrible.
And they always kind of have these inside jokes.
Yeah.
I think that experience is just like, why am I playing this game?
Yeah.
And that is like, both the game, the Insider Werewolves, it's fantastic. Take it to your work friend group or bring it every now and then and play it randomly while you wait for other people. Don't play with people that have played it a million times together and have like inside jokes or that are always asking the same question, because it becomes tedious, it becomes repetitive. The essence of the game doesn't change.
Yeah.
But I think the vibe breaks down. Like, it's no longer, I don't know, there's something off with it.
Yeah.
You
are not part of the game in that case. If you can't participate in the jokes, there's a clear method that you can participate, you're going to feel a little bit like left out.
Yeah, and also in the meetup is weird because you have a couple of people that have played a million times and then a couple of people that are completely new to games and new to the group and are also kind of shy. And then these people that are there in the meetup, like, they're shouting their questions and they're kind of being overwhelmingly vocal. I'm like, yeah, let everybody participate.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see that, like, in many different groups, there might be more people that are more vocal while playing this game. But still, I think this game to me does not work in the meetup setup, at least anymore. Uh-huh. Because you have like that dichotomy between like people that have played it multiple times together and maybe are like having these inside jokes or whatever.
Yeah.
And then these people that are new that like are shy and not even like that into the game. Or they might be. Like, I think most people had fun, but to me it was just like, I would rather not play these, you know?
Yeah.
For me, it's just like, it's not a nice experience in that setup. And that's why I decided that this was going to be my worst experience of 2026. Because honestly, I did still had a bit of fun. Like, I didn't hate it. But I was like, I wish I was playing something else. But then we are seven people. There's no other tables. We have to play these together.
Yeah.
That whole thing was just like,
What a sad story.
Very, very sad. I have nothing against the game. The game is great. Werewolves also great. But I'll try to avoid playing it in the meetup. And I have actually in the past when they have said like, hey, do you want to play Insider? No, thank you.
Yeah, I have a similar experience with another game at the meetup called Cockroach Poker.
Mm.
And because I've only played it at the meetup in a similar kind of setting, I just have never been able to appreciate the game. A lot of people really like it, but I haven't, you know, seen the fun. Because it's always always my experience has been inside jokes that I don't know. The people who know each other better or are like doing the inside jokes, they pass the bucks and the cards to each other, try to like challenge other people. And I just feel like I don't get to participate.
Mm.
And because of that, it's just has never been a good experience for me. Yeah.
Yeah. But now to the good part, the top 10 gaming experiences of 2026 for Jonas and me. I think it has been gaming experiences.
Maybe for you. For me,
it has always been gaming experiences for me. I think we have had these discussions before.
Yeah.
It's just like the experience of playing the game. Because it cannot be games, right? It has to be always the gaming experience.
Well, the experience is attached to
the game, yes.
Yes. But it's... here, my top 10 list is not going to be... Oh, this was the absolute funnest moment, necessarily. Or maybe they are. But the fun is a difficult word. What is fun? Is it? Do I have fun when I laugh out loud? Do I have fun when I squint my eyes and go into this planning mode to see how can I get out of this problem I'm in? Both are fun.
Yeah.
So maybe these are my top 10 gaming experiences, but I won't call them gaming experiences.
You're going to call them games. Top 10 games of first half of 2026.
Yes, that
for
I
you.
Played. Yes, in the past 6 months. Yes.
All right. So why don't you start us with your number 10?
Gladly. As it is our tradition, me and Jill have been playing some more exit games. Mm. In fact, I counted the number of exit games that we have played so far, not in the past 6 months, but just in general. And the number is, can you guess it?
7.
24.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's a lot of exit games, which means that we are getting less and less excited about them. And we have ventured into other families of puzzle games in the past 6 months. We played Ministry of Lost Things, and we are in the middle of our first unlock box. Mm. Unlock Secret Adventure is the box we have completed 2 out of 3 of the cases. Ministry of Lost Things was amazing. Unlock is less convincing, but above both of these sits Exit Nightfall Manor, which is a box in the Exit puzzle series, which are jigsaw puzzles.
Mm-hmm.
This means that you do a jigsaw puzzles that contain clues for solving different other types of puzzles that then move the story forward. We have done one other puzzle before, which was the Sacred Temple. Sacred Temple was pretty good, but the jigsaw puzzles of Nightfall Manor seemed like a step up from the Sacred Temple, as the Sacred Temple jigsaws felt most of the time like you were just doing jungle or rocks. So it's just, oh, well, this green, dark green, light green. But Nightfall Manor had a bit more variety in the jigsaws, the illustrations that were in those jigsaw puzzles, and also super solid puzzles in general. And me and Chilla also love a spooky theme, which Nightfall Manor delivers. So it was pretty much the perfect exit game for us. That's my number 10. Exit the game, plus puzzle, Nightfall Manor.
All right. So my number 10 is Bomb Busters. In particular, a Bomb Buster two-player game that I had with my cousin. He was visiting. I did not know if Bomb Busters was going to work with two people, because then each one of you has like two stands. We have talked about Bomb Buster before, where like, yes, you're basically trying to cut numbers. The numbers are put in stands. And normally each player has a stand each. But in a two-player game, you both have two stands that are separate from each other. You're still the player, but you have to follow all the rules with the separate stands, basically. It worked really, really well. We played it like 3 or 4 times with increasing levels of difficulty. And I stand by what I said last time about Bomb Busters, a fantastic game, and it works with two. So I really enjoyed the experience. My cousin was visiting. I did not know that he liked board games. He just told me. I just happened to bring some board games. And then we just went and spent pretty much the entire afternoon that he was visiting from Tallinn just playing some board games, because the day ended up being super, super rainy. So we went to my office. We put out some board games. We tried many different ones, but Bomb Busters is the one that I want to mention here, because it's also a fantastic game.
Yeah. Bomb Busters is the review that I would love to revisit and go back in time. And when I give that 1-star rating for Bomb Busters, I would say, no. Don't give that 1-star rating, Jonas. Say that you have played it too long time ago to give it any kind of rating.
Hey, you give the 1-star. You have to give a rating, yeah, and that's okay. It's okay to correct yourself later on. Have you played it again?
No, I have not. And I am not looking forward to playing it again. So that's because of that, I guess I gave it 1-star, because I'm I'm not really looking forward to.
So then why do you want to revisit?
I think it's because the 1-star implies flaws in the game, which I don't know if there's...
In this case, the 1-star implies flaws in your judgment.
Yes, exactly.
And that's
fine. It's a 1-star for me and a 1-star for Bombusters. Yeah,
and that's fine. But that's my number 10.
But the 1-star, we chose the stars because the star is still a positive twist to it. It's still a star.
It's still a star.
You get a star.
You got a star. You're a terrible game. You don't deserve to ever be played. But it's a star.
Yeah. Hey, have you heard about GOT 5? That's making the ways rounds, I guess, in continental Europe.
I have not heard about
GOT. So GOT 5, imagine Bomb Busters, but you don't see your numbers. You see other people's numbers.
Oh, and that's Hanami.
I guess there is some differences to it.
Yeah,
but apparently it's getting really, really popular.
Okay.
And I predict that by the end of this year or next year, we will at some point talk about GOT 5. and maybe other people will too.
Do you have it?
No. I thought that you should get it. It's more like your type of game, you know.
Yeah, man. Like, I'm seeing pictures of it. I've never heard of it. I've seen pictures of it. I immediately want to get it.
Yeah, their components look amazing, don't they?
There also seems to be like some sort of deduction because you have a little board and you're writing the numbers and marking which numbers. So, yeah. Fantastic. Anyway, got 5. Interesting. But I said Bombusters.
You said Bombusters.
And let's move on to number 9.
Next year is going to be a got 5 for you.
Maybe, yes.
My number 9 is Nusfjord Big Box. Nusfjord Big Box is back on the list. We played it 8 times in the past 6 months with Chilla. It hasn't lost its shine. The big box has plenty of content to keep us excited as you forget what are all the decks about with time. As time passes, you know, you forget, hey, what were even the buildings all about? So to me, it feels like I'm every time rediscovering a specific deck in Nusfjord. Mm. And what I mean by the decks is that in every game of Nusfjord, you pick one deck of cards that form the building market, which also shape very much the engines of the game. Big Box has plenty of those decks. You're not going to run out of them unless you play it back to back for weeks on end. I don't know. I think we have played it Nusfjord altogether now over 20 times. And if you would ask me, Jonas, hey, what's in the Herring deck? I would say, I have no idea. Let's play it and see what's there.
I still have to play it, but you're never going to play that game with anybody else but Chilla, if I know you well. So yeah. I, at some point, maybe we'll play Nusfjord with somebody else.
Yep.
And we'll have opinions about it. Other than that, right now I'm like, hey, Herring deck. Yes.
Yeah. Hey, next Golden Geek predictions, get them right. And you get the chance to play Nusfjord Big Box with me or your choice of Uwe Rosenberg farming game.
Then I have to prepare myself better.
Yes. So that was my number 9, Nusfjord Big Box.
My number 9 is, so I was debating whether should I put Spicy or The Quest for El Dorado here, because those both are games that completely different, but both are games that I played with my sister when she was visiting here with her wife, and those are experiences that I cherish. And again, I always think about experiences rather than games themselves.
Oh, this is exciting. I don't know which one is going to be, because Spicy is almost, it feels like a game that you could play with a deck of cards. Maybe you could if you change something. But it's like that type of a game.
Yeah. Spice is a super simple game where you're just like trying to bluff a little bit and it's super simple.
And then Quest for El Dorado, you have a map. You're raising on that map.
Yeah, Quest for El Dorado is like a better game. Like it's an actual game.
Oh, so which one is going to be? I'm excited.
I decided to put here The Quest for El Dorado. And just, I changed this last minute just because I didn't want to justify why this game was not in the list from previous time I played it. Because the previous time, on the previous list, there was The Quest for El Dorado, and I still enjoy it a lot.
Yeah.
And I like it every time we play it. Every time I play with somebody, everybody enjoys it. It's a great time. However, Spicy, I think, had the most laughs. We were laughing quite a lot every time we play Spicy, and it's a very nice, simple game that I think anyone you show to will have a good time. Yeah. But it's also a game that I think you could kind of burn out on, like, you play it enough times that like you don't want to play it for a long time. And The Quest for El Dorado is not that. The Quest for El Dorado you can play a lot of times. I know that you have said that you don't want to play it unless there's somebody super experienced, because then you will beat them handily. Yeah. But I still play it with like newbies I'm still new enough to this game that every time I play it, I'm like, it's a gamble whether I'm going to do well or not.
Yeah, and with this kind of like longevity with this small box card games, that is not that important. You are paying €1 per play, maybe.
Yeah.
If you play a €10 game 10 times. And if you laugh every time, you paid €1
for a lot of laughs.
For a lot of laughs.
Yeah.
That's a good deal.
Hey, I cheated. I managed to talk about both games. So there we go. But officially on the list is The Quest for El Dorado.
Yeah. But that's one official on the list, but for Spicy, I will at least give a comment. I have played Spicy only once. There is a classic bluffing card game that I don't know what is it called
like in English. Fish or something?
Maybe something like that. I never liked it. Mm. And I remember people comparing Spicy to that game. And therefore, I had very low expectations going in. And I had so much fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is such a fun game, but I've only played it one time, so I haven't had the chance to revisit it.
Mm. No, I played multiple times, that time with my sister, and then I showed it to people from my office, and they all liked it. And then a friend asked me to borrow it, and then they have also played with their family. And everybody I have shown it to has enjoyed it. And you can add complexity with changing some of the rules, but I've only played the basic version, and it still lasts well enough for 20 plays at least.
Yeah.
So that was my number 9, The Quest for El Dorado.
And my number 8 is Dark Pact. That's why I did not comment more on The Quest for El Dorado, because now we can compare two of these deck builders together. The Quest for El Dorado, that is a game that I have in the past weeks thought about, hey, should I actually cull this game? Should I sell it off? Should I give it to someone?
Mm.
Because now we have Dark Pact, and we're playing a lot of Dark Pact, and I really like Dark Pact.
Mm.
And Quest for El Dorado, it's great. But Dark Pact is amazing. So me and Chilla, we have been deck building this year. Everything started with Star Realms, which we have played 38 times in the past 6 months.
Whoa.
It's also a pretty fast game. And I think a lot of the Star Realms players there are like, well, yeah, it's not surprising you play 38 games of Star Realms in 6 months. Because of this, it feels also weird to leave Star Realms out of the top 10. I'm sorry, but I really, really, really like Dark Pact. Dark Pact is my number 8, my deck builder of choice. You can go to BGG and read the comments and see that Dark Pact is clearly not for everyone. I love the game. I'm not sure you will have a good time playing it, dear listener. I do feel that Dark Pact is a two-player only game and that you need to get multiple plays in to really appreciate the game.
Mm.
But Quest for El Dorado, you can have more players there. But I'm only playing it with Chilla.
Yeah.
So Quest for El Dorado is head to head going against Dark Pact.
Yeah, but I think Dark Pact is one of those that you couldn't have a non-hobby board gamer enjoy it.
Absolutely not. Yeah.
Yeah. The Quest for El Dorado, definitely. Like, I show it to my sister. I show it to my dad. They all play it. They all have fun. Dark Pact. People, I'm pretty sure neither of them would like that game. At least the first time we played.
100%. If someone would come to me to ask that, hey, Jonas, what are some fun deck builders? I never played a deck builder before. I would say, who are you going to play it with?
Yeah.
If they say like, oh, I'm going to play it with my partner. Then I would say, hey, go buy Star Realms for 15 euros or whatever it sells for.
Yeah.
And you will end up playing it 50 times.
Yeah.
Or I would say, go get Quest for El Dorado.
Exactly. And that's the thing. I can see perfectly you calling that game like, because you only play with Chilla and you wouldn't play with anybody else. So why would you play that over Dark Pact?
Yeah.
But it's a game that I couldn't call, for example.
Exactly.
Even if I own Dark Pact, because I like playing with people that are not that into the hobby. And therefore, I think sometimes like, maybe I should take Quest for El Dorado. Especially if I want to maybe later introduce them to something like Dune Imperium, or I think they're maybe not ready for Dune Imperium, then I would take maybe the Quest for El Dorado to show the basics of deck building.
Yeah. And if you would come to my house and say, hey, Jonas, let's play Quest for El Dorado. My response is not going to be, should we do Dark Pact instead? No, it's going to be, let's do it.
Okay.
Yeah, it's still a fun game.
So you'll still keep it or not sure?
Yeah, it's one of those weird things where I really like Quest for El Dorado. I'm always up for a game or down for a game, but it might be that I don't end up playing it and it's still a big box, takes space from something else. So that was my number 8, Dark Pact.
Okay, my number 8 is a game called Pictures. Again, I'm talking mostly about the gaming experience because I haven't played Pictures that many times in my life. I think I've played Pictures 3 times total ever. But the experience that we had playing Pictures at your office with Simone and Ellen and Mercedes, I think we had just played Sidereal Confluence, I think.
Yes, yes.
And then after that whole Sidereal Confluence stress and tension, then we played a game that is easy, relaxing, fun.
Uses a completely different part of your brain.
Uses a completely different part of the game. And we were laughing so much.
Yeah.
With Simone not putting enough red to represent to represent a truck. See, you're still remembering that.
Yeah.
And for me, that was a really like fun time and a really nice gaming experience.
Yeah.
Pictures is a fantastic game that I could recommend anytime. And yeah, that's why it's here on my number 8.
Yeah, those are such fun moments in Pictures when someone does something wrong, or like everyone else thinks they should have done something different with something.
Yeah.
And it's just a very fun moment every time. And well, someone could feel that, wait, doesn't that turn into bullying or whatever? But I think because of the nature of the artifacts that you're doing the art with, it just makes everyone understand that you can't take it too seriously.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also if you're like, just say like, you should have done that most of the time. Like, oh yeah, I should have done that. Or then the reaction is like, how could I? Like, it was impossible with this string to actually, I wanted to do better waves. They just don't, they just don't work. Yeah. So that was, like, it's a great game. And I think we all had fun.
Yes.
So that was my number 8, Pictures.
Okay, let's stay with these lighter games. My number 7 is Llama. I cannot be a Llama hype man without having Llama make an appearance in my top 10. It's the best family card game for ages from 5 to 95. Do not show Llama to your friends who want big gaming experiences, but do show it to your family.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't like it, come to me and I will refund your purchases.
Mm-hmm. Basic Llama.
Basic Llama. Or Basic Llama is the one I played
in
the past 6 months. I personally like Llama Kadabra. And I am maybe already thinking, could I onboard my mom from Llama to Llama Kadabra?
Yeah.
Llama Kadabra is not the one that I would suggest people to start with because it's a bit finicky, very finicky compared to Llama. But once you get the basic gist of Llama down, then the Kadabra version adds a couple of really fun twists to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we had a question in the Discord where somebody was saying like, hey, I don't want to play Uno for the whole week. What games do you recommend me to take for somebody that really likes Uno so that I could like offboard them from Uno and onboard them into actual good games? I don't know what these are the words. I'm just paraphrasing, so I don't want to put anyone in the spot. And then I think the first thing I came to mind was Llama. And I think you mentioned it also there on the chat. And definitely it's a fantastic game that hopefully more people would play and take seriously. Because it's also there's deeper strategy than people say with
that
Llama.
That is true, yes. But even then, I will admit, even those strategies, they end somewhere. You know, you can't find this endless depth in the game. But you know what? The people that you're playing with, they don't necessarily want that.
No. They just want to play. Now, the only bad thing about showing Llama to a Uno player is that they always want to like draw more than one card until they have a card to play. Or at least I had that experience a lot of times when I show the game to a new player. So it's like, can I keep drawing? No, just draw one. That's it. Or they want to put multiple cards at the same time or something like that if they have played with those Uno rules.
Yep. And Llama Kadabra I like also because it adds that how would I say, meanness of Uno, or like that tick-tattiness of Uno, which some people say that, that's bad. But you know, once you get familiar with the basics, you kind of feel that, well, Uno does have that element when someone is just piling those +2, +4, take those cards.
Oh, yeah, it becomes fun.
Yeah, and Kadabra adds that.
Okay.
So then if you are missing that, then you can add Kadabra in, and then now you can throw people under the bus.
Okay. So your number seven is?
Is Llama.
No Kadabra.
And no dice.
My number 7 is a game called Durak. So Durak is a Russian / Slavic game that you play with the normal deck of cards from 6 to ace, or 6 to king, and then the ace on top.
Yeah, and Durak means, does it mean idiot?
It means a fool or something like that. So you've played this game before?
No, but I should some point play this game because it is a classic card game.
So it's a classic card game. I've never played it. It got introduced to me as a silly Estonian game. And we actually played it with terrible rules. We played it really badly. Like when I played, I was like, this game sucks. Okay. So in the context of playing the game, I could have put that as a terrible gaming experience of 2026. However, I wanted to mention it here because after playing it, I'm like, okay, what's the name of the game? My friend that introduced this to us, she didn't remember the name of the game. So she had to ask the friend that introduced it to her. She told me, and then I'm like, because I wanted to put in my board game stats just so I would be able to remember or forget about it, but still like mark it. And then when she said the game and I start looking into it, I'm like, hey, there's actually a good game. And I start looking at the rules. And I'm like, the game actually looks pretty solid. Like, not the way we played it, but the game that could be played sounds like a really cool game. And then I was like, yeah, this is a game that I really want to play. And then you can play with two people, with three people, with four people. Hey, I haven't gotten down to play it.
Right.
In the good way. However, it was a great game experience because A, it reminds you that there's great games with cards that are even in BGG. Like, you can still find Durak in BGG as a solid game. People tend to forget about them unless they get re-implemented in a fancy version with nice and fancy cards. Like, Hearts got re-implemented as Rebel Princess, and then people talk about it, but nobody really talks about Heart.
Oh, not in the country of Finland. But I think I would imagine in the States there are plenty of places.
But people in the board game hobby, they don't talk about
cards. True, that's true.
They don't talk about these type of games.
Yeah.
So that's why I wanted to talk about it here.
Yeah.
Because it's like, hey, there's games that are worth just playing with a deck of cards. And then you can just buy that. And it doesn't have to have fancy printing, doesn't have to have anything. Now, the version that I played, terrible. But I really want to play Durak with the right rules because it seems solid. We also then played Euchre, which is also played with a deck of cards.
Oh, another classic.
That was a great experience, actually. That was a really great experience. So I'm, again, naming another game here in my number 7 spot. That is Euchre, classic game. Really good. We got to win this game. I hadn't played Euchre for a long, long time, and I didn't even remember. I remember it being more complex than it actually is. But then once we played, like, it was pretty strategic. You played in pairs, so you always have to play with four people.
Yeah.
So yeah, a couple of nice games with a normal deck of cards. Durak, Euchre, but my number 7 officially is Durak, or Durak. I don't know how to pronounce that.
Yeah. Euchre is a game that I also have not played Euchre. I feel that the only complaint I see online about Euchre is that once you can kind of get good at it, the hands play themselves. You have seen every hand, you've seen every play. But that's not really a complaint to me in the sense that, oh, what? I can play it 20 times and then it will start being repetitive? Hey, I'll play it 20 times.
Yeah, and then if it's repetitive, you play something else with the same deck of cards, mind you.
Yeah, yeah. So how easy are these games to teach? Where are they in terms of, like, classic card game complexity?
Super easy. Durak is super easy. You can teach it on the wrong way, like my friend did, or you can teach it on the right way, and that's still really easy. Like, the game, basically, there's a attacker and a defender, and you're attacking a person by just putting a card in front of them.
Yep.
In order to defend, the player has to put a card of the same suit with higher value.
Okay.
Okay? That's it. Either they're able to defend, or they'd have to take the cards to their hand.
Okay? Okay.
And then you recard back to 6 cards.
Yeah.
If you're able to defend, the attacker can keep attacking.
Did you say you discard back to 6 cards? Or
you recard back to 6
cards. Recard.
So you draw
this
back.
This is a new term. Sorry. Recard.
Recard. So you draw back to 6 cards until the deck is over. And then at that point, whatever cards you have in your hand is what you finish the game with. And whoever is the Durak or the Fool is whoever is the last player with cards in their hand.
Oh.
So that's the whole point of the game. Having a single Fool that is the loser. Yeah. Everybody else does not lose. They win.
Yeah.
So that's very simple. And then you're just attacking and defending. And there's a few more rules, but that's pretty much the gist of it.
Yeah.
So you kind of want to play strategically to get some of the good cards early in the game so that towards the end of the game, you have stronger hands to attack with or defend with.
Mm-hmm.
Then Euchre is a little bit harder because it's a trick-taking game.
Yeah.
And there's also a twist where, like, the Jack is the highest card on the trump deck or in the trump suit.
Okay.
But also the same color Jack is the second highest card. So if the trump is hearts, then the Jack of hearts is the highest card.
Yeah.
And the Jack of diamonds is the second highest card, and then goes the aces, and then, like, normal cards.
Uh-huh.
But in all of the other suits that are not hearts, and specifically the Jack of diamonds, everything else is like ace down to 9, I think is how you play it. So normally, if you're playing it, if the trump is hearts and somebody lead with spades, then the ace of spades would be the highest card.
Yeah.
So that can be confusing because, first of all, it's a most followed trick-taking game.
Yeah.
But also, these jacks, both of them are, like, a little bit hard to understand for a new person. But in essence, it's not that hard to understand. If people have played trick-taking games before, it should be relatively simple to explain this thing. But for somebody who has never played trick-taking games, well, there's always the trickiness of explaining trick-taking games and must follow, plus this Jack thing, that becomes a bit more complicated.
Yeah. But based on the description, Durak is definitely the one that I'm now thinking about teaching to family.
Yeah, and this is why it made my number 6.
Yeah.
Board game experiences.
Yeah, and like, you know, the greatest thing with teaching games to family is like, oh, what, it can be played with a classic deck of cards. That means that it is already downhill in terms of selling the game.
Yeah,
to
selling
people.
The game to somebody. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, my number 6 is a game that is also not very hard to sell to people who don't like games, and that is Hitster. Do you know when you are spending time with friends and then you start thinking whether you should suggest to play a game or not, but you don't really know what's the vibe and you don't know whether you will bring the mood up or down with a game or a suggestion to play a game? Well, with Hitster, you don't need to think about that stuff. Hitster is listening to music, the game. Do you like listening to music? Do your friends like listening to music? Well, now you can listen to music and play a pretty fun trivia / guessing game at the same time. And people won't tell you, please stop bringing board games to our parties.
Yeah. I completely agree. Actually, my number 6 is Hitster.
Oh.
I swear.
This is so sweet.
Yeah.
We are harmonizing?
We are harmonizing for the first time ever.
Yeah.
But now an interesting thing is like, what version of Hitster do you play with your friends and with group of friends? Because
yeah,
I think Hitster, I played in Mexico
mm-hmm.
and we had a very localized version with a lot of Mexican songs, which made it a lot of fun to play there, but obviously impossible to play here.
Yeah, I have always played Hitster in an international group.
And you have like an international version of
Yeah,
Hitster,
it's like an
American
English version.
Yeah.
Where there's maybe a couple songs that from the 80s or 70s that feel songs that maybe this was super popular in the UK,
yeah,
but not so popular anywhere else. But that doesn't really hurt the experience at all. But I think if I would have Hungarian Hitster,
yeah,
Chilla's mom would probably do much better.
Yeah.
And she would have a better time. And it might be pretty fun for Chilla and her mom to watch me try to figure out what is happening.
What year is this song from? Yeah, I can see that. But yeah, like same things you said, like this is a simple version anybody can play. You're just listening to music and remembering like good hits from the past.
Oh yeah, and we have talked about this before, especially those 90s hits.
Yeah.
Where they come back, it's like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
Now it's time to do a little bit of jamming also around the table. The party is getting lit. Yes,
and,
lit.
And you basically say. Is it so that you played with just like a Spotify account, right?
Yeah, or you need to have Spotify.
And then you can run the whole song.
You can run the whole song. Yeah, you can listen to the whole song.
So you can just like be jamming for a while if you really like the song.
Yeah, yeah. I think that the fun moments where the song is running long is if someone is kind of wondering, what is this?
Yeah.
And it's not a very good song, but that rarely happens.
Okay.
Even if someone is wondering what this is, but if it's a good song, you're kind of dancing, you're tormenting them, you're teasing them.
Yeah.
It's trying like, well, I would know this if I would have this. This is such an easy song.
Yeah.
I know this. You might throw in some lyrics
to
show that, well, you actually know even what's going to be sang next. And then sometimes when it's your turn to guess, but it's a banger, you just first start like just kind of talk about the song. Oh, this was so great. And it's like, oh yeah, I was supposed to figure out when this released.
And the great thing about the game is like you're guessing where it goes in the timeline. And that makes it hard. Well, unless somebody is really, really good into music or really good about music, that makes it hard for everyone. We're like, that was it 2004, 2005.
Yeah.
I don't remember. And then especially when you already have the 2003 there or 2006 or 2004 or whatever, and you're trying to put it like, it can become tricky that way. So even though I'm not that good at songs, I still have managed to win this game just because it's still like there's some vagueness for other people and even for yourself. Like, yeah, I'm not sure, but it was middle of the 90s. So it doesn't matter exactly.
Yep.
I don't even remember what's the name of the song or the lyrics, but I remember that it was in the 90s that I was listening to it.
Yes.
Yeah, such a great game.
Yep. So should we do this together?
That was our number 6, Hitster.
That's perfect. Okay, my number 5 is Race for the Galaxy. I got to play Race for the Galaxy with the new Xeno Counter-Strike expansion. There are some Counter-Strike mechanics in the expansion that we did not play with, but we did play with the new Frontier deck that comes with the expansion. Or, well, my opponents played with the Frontier deck. I foolishly ignored the Frontier deck and got pummeled in our back-to-back games. The Frontier deck is this deck where you draw top deck a couple cards. They are all planets. One of them you get to settle, put into your tableau if you're able to do it. The planets that are in the Frontier deck are pretty much overpowered versions of their regular planets.
Mm.
And maybe there's a couple wilder ones. But when I say overpowered, I don't mean that, now the balance is off in the game.
Mm.
No. It's just that with the Frontier deck, you have to look what you get from there and then adapt your strategy accordingly. Because you cannot also look into the Frontier deck on every single turn. It's kind of like having a new starter planets coming into your tableau throughout the game. I really want to try the expansion again because I didn't really engage with the Frontier deck. But in the long run, I probably end up preferring the base Race for the Galaxy as I always do with these expansions. But yeah, number five, Race for the Galaxy.
Okay. My number five also goes into the realm of experiences rather than the actual game being good because I've only played it one time. And it's Feed the Kraken. So this is a social deduction game where there's three different teams. There is the cultist, the pirates, and the good guys. And then each one, you have a ship in the center, and each one of the teams is trying to take the ship into a different direction. So the pirates want to take it to the top right, the good guys to the top left, and the cultists right down the middle. If you take the ship into that direction, you win the game. So there is a couple of mechanics of like how you choose the directions, but basically, if you have ever played Secret Hitler, where you're like, hey, choosing a chancellor and a president where they are like selecting from a group of cards what they're going to vote or what the direction is going to be, that's pretty much how this works. It's like selecting from a group of cards what's the direction that is going to be that the ship takes, and then you have two roles that do this.
Yeah.
In a very similar way as Secret Hitler, where one of the roles takes a bunch of cards and gives two to the other person, and then that person from those two selects one.
Yeah.
That's how you play it. And there is, again, similar to Secret Hitler, a round of like voting whether you want that team to be the one selecting. And then you also have a bit further mechanics like that you have some special powers with your characters, and you have a mechanic where you can make a mutiny where like you are like showing a number of pistols.
Muskets. Is it?
Yeah. And then you show them, and if there's enough, then a mutiny happens, and whoever shows the most will become the new captain or something like that.
Yeah.
So, pretty simple game, but surprisingly fun. Like, I was expecting this to be another social deduction game. And yes, it is. But those few extra mechanisms make me want to play this way more than any of the other social deductions games that I played, except Blood on the Clock Tower.
Okay, what about Resistance and Avalon?
Same. Like, I think I've played enough Resistance that I'm like... Eh.
Yeah,
like,
so but what does this add to that that it's missing from the Resistance and Avalon? And just, if you have not played Resistance or Avalon, in Resistance, very easy. Two teams, the good guys and the bad guys, dealt out randomly. And then you try to like figure out who are the bad people.
This adds information a bit. Like, you have a bit more information
at
times. Like, you also have, depending on the places that you go to, you can see different cards. I think I felt more able to determine who's who in this game than in other games. Like, Avalon, like, sometimes it's just like, by the time you know who's who, it's like too late in the game because... Well, sorry, not Avalon. Resistance. I have never played Avalon.
How is it too late?
It's just like, oh, well, somebody managed to trick you in a way to... I don't know.
But is that too... Because when it's too late, it means that, oh, the evil guys just won.
Yeah.
And then you're like, well, that was too late. Yeah. But that's going to happen in all of the social deduction games where it's like, oh, it was them.
Yeah,
that was just
like,
revealed. They just revealed them, their cards.
Somehow, it felt... I mean, I was playing with a bunch of drunk people, so they were doing a lot of mistakes and stuff. But it still felt way more fun. It felt less, at least I had the capacity of gather more information. I felt that this game gave you more, a bit more information, who's making which decision and where they want to go. And I don't think with the Resistance, I've always feel like, okay, whoever lies the best is going
to
win.
But what about the voting in the Resistance?
Same. It's just like, well, if you manage to lie to people, like, what did you do? Then people are going to vote you into the right place.
I ask this to see, like, okay, what level of Resistance are you playing in? And using the votes to gather information about the things. You're not on that level of resistance meta where you do like three rounds of voting.
Three rounds of voting?
Yeah. That will, like, once you get deep into the game, it will happen so that there will be three rounds of voting.
Ah, you mean just because people don't manage to agree on anything? We're like, no, everybody says no to that team, so then we'll have to gather a new team.
Yes, because I think in the beginning, or like the first games of Resistance might go so that you do usually end up just selecting voting, saying like, yeah, in the beginning.
That has to happen always in the first round, for example, in Resistance. Like you don't know anything. There's no absolutely no information to gather.
Oh, yeah. Well, first of all, the only difference with Avalon compared to Resistance is that in the Avalon... Yeah, there's the Seer.
And Merlin.
But the Resistance has the expansion that has the Seer as well.
Never played.
And I like that. I do think the Seer expansion elevates the game considerably. But when you have the Seer, when you do the votes...
Okay, if you have the Seer,
then
that's a different thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's a different game that I have not played.
Yeah.
Simple Resistance to me just feels like, okay, the first round is like... very luck dependent who you send.
That's true.
And very luck dependent whether or not you get some information about whether that's a bad person or not. Even if you're a bad person, you don't know, like, you're not able to communicate at that point with your teammate. Like, so if two bad people go,
mm-hmm.
and for example, you're thinking like, oh, I'm going to let them put the negative. So I'm going to put like the pass so that people, and then we both put pass and it's like, oh, now we kind of messed up our team because we both put pass thinking that the other person was going to put fail.
Yeah.
Or if you then, on the other way, you both put fail, then it's really easy to be like, okay, two out of these three people in the very first round are evil. So now it's like very easy to deduce who's going to go. Or at least don't select any of them three for the rest of the game. And then the good guys are almost certainly guaranteed a win.
Yes, but that is a very rare case when it happens. And then it like, the game ends.
So many times.
Okay, well then the game ends very fast and then you go again. To me, Feed the Kraken and Secret Hitler are games where they just add these mechanics that first also to me seemed fun.
Yeah.
And I do think they're fun. They let you kind of play in that setting a lot more than Resistance lets you do. You don't end up doing pretty much any kind of role-playing into Resistance once you just get into the game. But then I have noticed that in Secret Hitler and Feed the Kraken, I think I played it once or twice, you end up having less of those debates where you go, that round number two, Louis, you voted for that team in that fourth round of voting. Why did you do it? And you're like, well, Jonas is just trying to put ideas into people's minds. And then I go, listen to it. His argument is that I'm a poison whale. That's Resistance to me. Feed the Kraken.
Who do you play Resistance with like that? Because also at that point, it's like, you have to first play it with people that have played it before.
Yeah.
You have to play it with people that you're comfortable like playing this type of game with. So definitely not in the meetup. You have not played this type of games in the meetup.
I have played it in the meetup. It does not go to that level.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's my point. Like, who do you play with this?
Mm-hmm.
And then at that point also starts developing this meta. And it has nothing to do with the game. It's just like the meta of your group of friends. And like, oh, we know that you should never vote yes on the very first round of like whoever team is selected or whatever. So because you voted yes, that means that you are definitely on the bad team.
But then there's the meta of the meta of the meta of the meta of the meta.
Exactly.
Because of course, because then you are, no, then I didn't vote like that because you're going to think like that. So I voted like this.
Exactly.
And but it's just, to me, it turns into this game of having to much more close look at, okay, can I tell when you are lying and when you are speaking truth? And how can I find these evidences of quickly throw at you to kind of catch you off guard where you're going to make that weird movement and you're going to be like, huh? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Now I know that you lied. And to me, that's a fun experience. But I totally get why people would pick, for example, Feed the Kraken over the Resistance.
Yeah.
Because to some people, that's not the fun part of the Resistance, of analyzing every single micro action in someone's faces and figuring out, well, how can I actually get into that person's head?
Yeah, and I would love to play Resistance with that version, like with a group of friends that maybe wants to play it, but I don't have a group, like I don't think I have a group big enough that would play the Resistance that way, because if you play with five people, it's not, I think, can you play with
five? Five is perfect.
Really?
Yeah, that's the sweet spot in
you
Resistance.
Think?
I think so.
I think Resistance should be like 6-7. No? I don't know. Well, then I have a group of friends that I could play it with, or we could play it together. But for example, this one with work, at some point, I'm really good at this type of games. So at some point, I feel really, really bad about tricking my colleagues, especially when I started having people in my team that I was like directly lying in this game, and then maybe they get it. they got frustrated about. So like, okay, these games I cannot play with my colleagues.
Yeah.
I think it feels like the wrong dynamic to foment lying to them and being good at it.
Yeah.
So then I'm like, okay, then it would have to be in the meetup. And then the meetup is always like super random if it's going to be a good game or not.
Yeah.
I think Feed the Kraken, even Secret Hitler, like they are not so random whether or not they're going to be good games. I think they're like good. They're like, they have a different kind of feel to it and a different type of information gathering than Avalon. Resistance. Like Resistance, you have to be like, oh, you lied in this. And you have to be playing on that level. Whereas I think Feed the Kraken and Secret Hitler are like a little bit more play, and then they give you these mechanics where you can lie or not, but then still things are going to happen. And I think Feed the Kraken is the better version of Secret Hitler in that same level.
Mm.
I do think that the Resistance has maybe a different feel to it as a social deduction game.
Yeah.
But I don't feel like playing it almost with anyone because I cannot get to that level or that group of people that would like to play it in the way you describe it.
Yeah, but even then, it's kind of like you can bring that energy to the Resistance group. And it's still enjoyable to play that Resistance type of game for the first time with someone and for the first time having to analyze when they are speaking the truth, when they are lying. And you can bring that energy of saying like, hey, you did that with the voting. Do you remember that? To kind of see them go like, in their mind, they go like, oh, crap. But then they try to just shake it off.
Yeah. But I mean, I had Feed the Kraken is a game that I also was impressed because I saw it once and I was like, nah. It's probably silly. It was surprisingly good. Like, really good. So that's why it made it to my list of gaming experiences. That was my number 5, Feed the Kraken.
I played Maria 3 times in the past 6 months, which is my number 4, Maria. That came off weird.
Yeah.
My number 4 is Maria. I played Maria 3 times in the past 6 months. Luis is laughing here because I did a really bad take. Leave it in the edit. Let them see how the sausage is made.
Yeah.
Let them see what an idiot I am.
I'll leave it in the edit then.
It's in my script.
Yeah.
And for some reason, I thought, I'm going to freestyle this.
Yeah.
and it did not go well. Okay. So I have this post on BGG where I compare Maria to the Mataco trilogy. Kemet, Cyclades, and Innis. For every game, I tell why Maria is so much better than Kemet or Cyclades or Innis. Then Clyde, our friend in the game group, was kind of like, hey, okay, yeah, let's see what this Maria is like then, because he really enjoys Dudes on the Map games. Loves Kemet, loves Innis. I would assume he also loves Cyclades. Then we played it with Clyde. He was not impressed. And he kind of asked me, why would I compare Maria to the Mataco trilogy? Which is a question someone has also asked me in that BGG post, which you can also find if you go to Maria, check the reviews, it's there. So here is why I compare the games. I play all of these games because I want to engage in war-like conflict with my friends. Maria delivers that experience. The Mataco trilogy doesn't. That's it. Luis, are you going to...
Why do you say that the Mataco trilogy does not deliver a conflict experience with your friends? With your friends experience.
Well, yeah, there is conflict, but it's not... What ends up happening is that, well, in Kemet, well, then now I have to study these tech trees. And then some combat happens. In Cyclades, well, I have to build my economy. And then some combat happens. And in Innis, I have to draft these cards the right way. Innis is the one I like the most out of these three. And there's like maybe the less combat. It maybe feels the most warlike. Out of the trilogy, but there is this efficiency puzzle that's built in all of these three games. And I feel that I have now seen the efficiency puzzle that is hidden behind these miniatures of monsters and combat mechanics and whatnot. And what I see underneath there is a pretty boring game.
Whereas
in Maria, I'm in the boxing ring with two other people, and we're just punching each other for the whole time and figuring out who's going to break first.
And why is this not boring? Like, you said that
Have you ever been to a boxing ring?
Yeah.
Like, it's like, were you bored?
I have never been to a boxing ring.
Me neither. But I have.
You have imagined how it is like.
I have done a starter course in kickboxing and in Krav Maga, so I have at least sparred a little bit. And when you're sparring, you're not like, well, this is kind of boring. No, you are focused on what your opponent is about to do, and just feeling also this ever increasing tiredness that grows in your body.
I wonder if you have
the adrenaline.
I wonder if you have to play the trilogy with less people. Because we always play when we're like 4, 5, 6.
No, I played Kemet with 3, and that was the worst experience out of all of these games I think I ever had.
Really?
Yeah. It does not work at 3 at all. It's just, it's so, you just don't end up being in your faces at all. And then you just do the tech trees and oops, I won.
Really?
Yeah.
It feels like you would like have more combat.
So because we played 2 times at 3 players.
You did?
Yeah, we did.
We did?
Yeah. So don't come at me with those, oh, maybe we should try with lower player count.
I mean, I liked it, like, because which one we have played? Cyclades? No, I think you have not played Cyclades with me with 3 people.
I have.
Like, yeah. The original version,
the original,
yes. But the second version, I think you're, because when we played was 4.
Yes, that was 4, yes.
And I have not played Cyclades with you other than those 2 times.
Yeah, but I also hated the original.
Yes, I know
you did. So I don't think the Legendary Edition is a game that, oh, I just need to play the Legendary Edition at 3. I don't think that's the solution here.
So my question is just like, what does Maria have that doesn't make it boring? That doesn't make it like an efficiency puzzle?
Mm-hmm.
Like, is it that it's always changing? Like, there's more decision making? So it depends on, because I've never played Maria. Mm-hmm. I'm imagining like the game Friedrich, which we have played a bit. So I'm imagining like there's a map and there's different locations that you can move to. And then you are using cards to basically fight it out depending on the location that you're at. At least that's more or less how I... So then what makes it so that it doesn't become boring?
Because there's no engine.
Yeah, yeah.
It's this art of removing and then the game gets better. And because of there is no engine, it's just the battles that you need to focus on. You get the same amount of cards every turn. Well, there's ways to get a little bit more in Maria, but and I guess those things turn into a bit of an engine. But to get to those points, you also have to do this bidding game and win there to get there. So the lack of engine is one thing. Then just the way the mechanic works and the way those battles then happen, it's not just that, oh, we're going to have a fight. I'm going to roll 3 dice. You're going to roll 3 dice. Oh, so you lose 2 people. Yeah. I lose 3. No, we're in a fight. We're in hearts. And I have a hand of cards. You have a hand of cards.
Yeah.
I look at your hand. I'm guesstimating. Ooh, there's maybe like 12 cards there. Yeah. So statistically, 4 of them would be hearts. Because in Maria, you have the 4 classic suits. 4 of them would be hearts. And then we just start playing them one by one.
Yeah.
And I play a down hearts of 8 of hearts. And I say, Louis, you're at -8. And it's just, and it continues. And
I get
continues.
It. It just feels, I mean, I like Friedrich.
Uh-huh.
It's just way heavier.
Maria or Friedrich?
I don't know Maria, but I way heavier than a Mattegott. Like a Mattegott trilogy is like, yes, there's an engine, and yes, there is like, but there's a lightness to it that like
there is,
I don't
get
tired of it. I'm like, I can play Kemet today, and then I can play Kemet tomorrow. I can play Friedrich today, and then I don't want to play Friedrich for another month. And that's, maybe it's not boring, because it's definitely not boring.
Yeah.
But it's just like, I get tired of it. Like, I'm like, I need a break.
Thank you. You are teeing this up to me, because yes, it is taxing.
Yeah.
It is taxing, and I also cannot imagine myself doing back-to-back games of Maria. I would be like, no, I need a break. Which goes back to the boxing match.
Yeah.
Because you're not like after a boxing match, be like, okay, well, let's do another one.
And there's still some element of luck that I'm like, I really need the position where I have, I'm not close to hearts.
Mm-hmm.
And I have all of these hearts that are useless, kind of.
Yeah.
Right? And so sometimes it's like, I have felt frustrated playing Friedrich, and I'm like, if I had 2, 3 different cards here, I would have definitely won that battle, which maybe would have led to having a better game.
Yes, but you end up kind of seeing how those hearts keep collecting in your hand. And usually then you should start thinking about, well, how can I make use of these? And it's not going to be on that same turn, not on the next. You're going to have to build to it. And in Maria, you have that politics board, which gives you another place to play those cards. So I think you would probably enjoy that mechanic. Maria. I prefer Maria over Friedrich in real life plays.
Yeah.
Because the politics board, it just adds a niceness to it. The 3-way balancing act thing, it just works really well in real life. online, I think Friedrich might be my favorite game to play online.
Got it.
Not Maria, because then you don't get to kind of negotiate that much online, and I don't know. It just, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I can see your point. I would like to play Maria at some point.
Oh,
but on Sunday.
Yeah, so we are having this terrace barbecue games. What is it called?
Yeah.
Louis requested that people only bring fresh games. Someone asked, Louis, what are fresh games? Louis says, games that I have not played.
Games that we have, like, I don't want people to bring, and like, Irish Gage or Age of Rails, South Africa.
You said Maria.
Or Maria.
Yeah, like, Maria is not a fresh game. That's a direct quote.
Yes, Maria is not a fresh game.
Yeah.
I don't know, like, it just feels like otherwise we'll just play the same old, so I just want people to bring, I don't know, interesting, different games than we have not played.
Yeah, well, definitely, if we would play Maria there, yes, it wouldn't be a game that we could then you could review in the podcast. So I get your sentiment there.
Yeah, but it wasn't about that. It was just like, I don't feel like playing these games that we've already played like two or three times in the last year or something.
Yeah, and it's just you.
Me.
All.
Yeah.
You all.
You all. Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, the Maria was like, it feels like Frederick. I know that it's going to be different, but I'm like, okay, yeah, I played Frederick, therefore I played Maria.
Uh-huh, okay.
And it's just like, no, I want something different. Like, I want, if Glide has something flashy and nice, I'm like, yeah, I want to try that.
Mm-hmm.
If you do too, then I want to try that.
Yeah. Okay.
So,
but that was not my number four, Maria.
My number four is a two-player card battling game called Tag Team. A nice two-player game where you're just like putting cards in your deck and then the deck gets revealed one by one and then you're attacking your opponent. Each one of you has two different characters. If either of those characters gets knocked out, you win the game. Super simple game. We have talked about it already in the podcast before. I keep playing this with Mia. Every now and then we just take it out, choose two fighters, start battling it out. Now I have the physical version of the game. I've had it for a while, and then I played this game, I think, not 30 times, but 13 times, I think, in the last 3 months, which is when I got the game.
Yeah.
So yeah, really nice game, really enjoyable. Looking forward to the expansion. I think there's a standalone expansion that is coming this year.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, Tag Team, still good, still great, still on my list. But do you have anything to say about Tag Team?
Well, Tag Team, I got to play it with you in Essen. Then I also tried it online. Online, it doesn't work as well. Yeah. There's so much to track.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really, really enjoyed my game.
Yeah, this game, I actually will be bringing it to the, because it's fresh.
But it's two-player only.
Yeah, but that's the type of thing that I think if people come at different times, and if it's like I come a bit late or we just finish a game and somebody has to leave and then we're only two, it's like, hey, let's play tag team.
Yeah.
Let's
Smart.
Play a quick tag team battle or two and wait for the other players to finish their round or whatever, or to come. So that is why I'm bringing Tag Team.
Although it's not fresh.
It is pretty fresh for everyone except you. And you have not played it that much either.
But you said you'd be playing it now.
Yeah, fresh for you. I'm delivering freshness for you.
Yeah, okay, gotcha.
So that is my number four, Tag Team.
My number three is Sidereal Confluence. Sidereal Confluence keeps being on the list. It is unbalanced. It is a mess. It trains me physically and mentally, kind of like Maria. But I love it. Also like Maria. I can't wait for the next game. And Luis, you owe me a game of Sidereal Confluence now that you lost the Golden Geek predictions.
And honestly, don't hate the idea. I was thinking about whether to put Sidereal Confluence. But no, I was like, nah, it cannot make the list. It's not that good of an experience. But I did enjoy it. I think I took it also less seriously this time, which I think we have talked about it. But yeah, I'm looking forward to that next play, but hopefully it's not going to happen in the next 3 or 4 months.
Yes.
Because I still need my brain to rest from that stress.
Uh-huh.
Even though I didn't take it seriously, it's still taxing, as you said.
Yes. I thought you were going to say that it's not fresh.
Oh, it is not fresh for sure. So it's not coming to the...
Yeah. Next 3 months for Luis.
Yeah.
Just has to be freshness.
Yeah.
And for you, my opponent, has to also be fresh for you. That's the Luis demand.
It has to be fresh for me. If you bring it, you have to know that, like, hey, this is a fresh game for you guys.
No,
it doesn't need to be fresh for the person that is bringing the game. If you have, if you bring Dark Pact, I would consider that fresh for the group.
Yeah.
Even though I played it only once, that's still fresh. I know you will probably not want to bring it, but that would be considered a fresh game.
Okay.
In my opinion.
Yeah. And you don't want someone around the table to feel unfresh.
I don't want someone around the table to feel like, hey, these games are not fresh.
Okay, gotcha.
Hey, I don't care. I just want to play not the same old, same old. It's okay.
All right, that was my number three, Sidereal Confluence.
My number three is definitely not a fresh game. It's a game that I played, I don't know how many times, because I played this so many times before I started recording in my board game stats. This is Monikers, a very simple game of guessing the card. Have you played Monikers in Moniker version?
Yes. And Monikers only. That's the only version of the game I have played.
Okay. I think there's also called Time's Up. It's another version of this game. I used to play this game in Mexico with like just characters, like history characters. I then later came here, found out about Monikers when I was in the hobby. And now this is the version that I played the most. I think it's the best version to play because it gives points depending on how hard the card is to guess.
Yeah. And some people I have heard saying that, oh, well, that detracts from the simplicity of the game. But no, I think it's a good thing that it's there. Because I think most of the time people don't remember the Monikers games in terms of like who won.
Yeah.
More about the fun stuff.
Yeah.
But then if you have a really hard word.
Yeah.
And you might feel that, okay, I'm going to pass on this. But when you see those points, you're like, I want to try.
I'll try a bit harder. Yes. Yeah. Yes, that's true.
And then the funness ensues.
I mostly play actually this game with my colleagues. We have a cottage retreat every 6 months. And we have every now and then some events or parties or whatever. We always bring it. We don't always play it, but there's always, every time it's played, I think it's a blast. People that even normally don't like playing board games or normally don't like to play in competitive board games are always happy to play Monikers because it feels, as you say, like nobody cares about the points.
Yeah.
We do count the points just to see, but nobody really cares. They are just doing it for the experience, for the laughs, for the inside jokes, which are always being created. Like,
yeah,
there's always an inside joke. There's always a funny thing that you say it, there's some misunderstanding that happens in the first round, and that's actually what you mimic on the third round.
Yeah.
Instead of like just saying what the card says, you just mimic the misunderstanding or played charades it or whatever it's called. So yeah, that's my number three. Great game. And every time I play it, I'm like, this is a great game. This is a game that deserves to be played by everyone.
Yeah, I think I have not maybe played it for 2 years or something like that. Yeah, if I would have played it, I think there's a good chance it would have been in my top 10 as well.
Yes. My number three, Monikers.
My number two is Brass Lancashire. Brass Lancashire is back on the list, baby. It is not as bombastic as Sidereal Confluence. It's not as conflict-heavy as Maria, but it is such a beautiful combination of building infrastructure, planning with cards, and trying to always be two steps ahead of your opponents. Luis, you still haven't played Lancashire, right?
Right.
Yeah. You are a Birmingham boy.
I am a Birmingham boy.
Yeah. Are you excited about playing Lancashire?
I would 100% consider that certified freshness.
Oh, but we just played it. I just played it last Sunday.
But you are bringing it, so it's okay.
No, but then there are people...
Fresh.
I play it with Mercedes and Ellen.
Well, you can bring it for me, and then I don't have to play with Mercedes or Ellen.
Oh, Clyde could play it.
Glad could play it.
Yeah.
Simone could play it.
Yes.
Yes.
And then we could have not an unfresh person.
But to be honest, no. I would consider that. For me, I would like you to bring it, but that definitely would fall into 100% the category if that's not a fresh game.
Yeah.
Exactly what I meant. Like, don't bring a game that we always play. Bring something else. But if you want to play it, if you feel like it's good, and I would love to play it, so I would allow one on fresh game there. Yeah.
And there is some recency bias here. I just played Brass Lancashire yesterday.
Yes.
Actually. Yesterday. Yeah. But why I feel confident putting it here, even with this recency bias, is that I had not played Lancashire in over a year. And then I had these great Sidereal Confluence games. And I kind of thought that, oh, Sidereal Confluence, that might be my preferred strategy game over Brass Lancashire. Not that they even compete necessarily in the same space, but you know, in my mind, my top lists or whatever, I was thinking Brass Lancashire, can it still hold up? But when we started playing it, as soon as I saw my hand of cards, looked at the map, started making my strategy, I realized that yes, this is the exact decision space I want with these kind of efficiency games. Because you're just figuring out, well, first of all, what can I do? What's possible for me? And okay, if I want to do that, how are my opponents probably going to mess me up?
Yeah.
What are the short-term things that I just have to let go? Be like, I can't do that. I must focus on this. I must execute.
Yeah, if
on
I
this
want
thing.
The points.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I guess it's that. And I really want to play it because I really enjoy Brass Birmingham. So
yeah.
I definitely would like to try Lancashire. I just want to see like what's different. Why does Jonas like Lancashire way more than Birmingham?
Yep.
Because Birmingham is a great game.
Yes.
Okay.
But not as great as Lancashire.
And that's what I need to check.
Yeah. There's also Brass Pittsburgh coming out.
Yeah.
I will not be buying it. If someone buys it, I will be happily play it and try it out.
I hope somebody buys it so I can also happily play it.
And the reason why I'm not buying it is because everything I've heard about it, I'm just put off by it.
Same. I think it's going to be too busy.
Yeah, it really feels, and it's probably not this, but it does feel based on what I've heard that it's like, hey, there's this mechanic, let's add a little bit here extra. Oh, and then this mechanic, let's add something here more. And this mechanic, let's add this something here more.
Yeah.
And Brass Lancashire, it's even like a more stripped down of version of Birmingham. Not considerably, but, you know, a little bit still. Yeah.
Which is the original version, right? Like that's,
Brass
that's
Lancashire
what
is the
became
original.
Brass became Brang Lancashire.
Yes.
Kind of.
With like the asterisk of the original Brass, which I have never played. And I don't know the exact rules, but there are, if I remember correctly, some specific, there might be like some specific rules that regard Liverpool and some other kind of details that Martin Wallace, the games designer, kind of likes doing, because he really sees that he goes in many times theme first. And then sometimes you see the kind of like the theme in some game and be like, okay, yeah, this is not the most elegant mechanism here. It's clearly because Wallace wanted to add here. It's just
something
ended up,
about the theme.
For some reason, it survived throughout the development process. So Brass Lancashire, to my understanding, it's like a developed version of the original Brass, meaning they have removed some of those corner cases.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
But in general, I think the consensus is that Brass Lancashire roughly equals Brass. No one is saying, oh, Brass is so much better than Brass Lancashire. Mm.
Or so much different.
Yeah. Some people will say that they like the board of Brass more.
Okay.
And if you go online and if you look at the Brass board, the original one, and you're like, what? Why would someone like this more? Well, consider the fact that it's a little bit clearer, maybe cleaner, less noise.
Okay.
But I like Brass Lancashire production just fine. I think I like it a lot. So that's my number two, Brass Lancashire.
My number two is Lata, a game by, I think, some of my favorite designers, Rola and Costa. I played Lata about a week ago, like not this Saturday, but the last Saturday again. I brought it out because we were missing a friend and I was like, oh, this is supposed to be kind of fast, which Lata is not really that fast because people, especially if you're teaching it for the first time, take their time on like understanding the rules and playing the game and making decisions. And it's like, it's the BGG, according to BGG, is best at three. My friend then arrived when I was doing the teach and then we played a four-player game. My God, I've never had so much fun with Lata, and Lata was already one of the games that I already enjoyed quite a lot. And this, I think, was the best game of Lata I've had. Every time I played it, the more I played, which I haven't played that much, I should bring it more often to different occasions. It's so good. It's such a good game, man.
Unfortunately, it's not fresh. Or is it fresh if you're going to bring it?
Have you played it?
I played it that one time with you, the two-player game, and I, with this praise, I want to revisit it.
I think it's just like, it's fresh. Ellen is the only person that has played it.
Yeah. And if it's bad, then I'm going to give you a really hard time in this podcast. But if it's good, I'm kind of like, I want to see the magic that you see.
I think maybe every time I played it, I feel like, oh, this is actually better than I even remember it. Uh-huh. I remember it being the first time I played it. Okay. When I saw it the first time, I was like, oh, what's that? Like, it's so confusing. Then we played it. I was just like, okay. Then I played again. I was like, oh, this is actually good. And now I play it. And I'm like, oh, this is really good. You know, and it's just, this is where I am with Lata. And then I'm like, this is better. And everybody enjoyed it in a way that I was also not expecting them to enjoy it because I was thinking that maybe it will be too confusing or they will not get it. Everybody also did better than me. So then like, it was not, they definitely got how the game mechanics work and everything. So I also like, the more I play, the less stress I am, I think, about people not understanding and having a lot of like different moving parts. We're like, okay, maybe it's not as hard as I originally felt it was to explain and to describe. So it's also like my experience of showing the game has improved, and that's also why it's here. Plus, I like this game and I want more people to play it, and I want more people to know about these two designers, which are awesome. And then the Kinas series is still coming with the fourth game.
Yeah, speaking of the series, because Cafe, I really like, really great. Oliva, we played that, you showed it to us.
Yeah.
I think Oliva is a stinker.
I don't think it's a stinker. I don't think it's that great either. I have to play it more to have a good decision. Yeah. But I don't think it's a stinker at all. I think there's more. I think it's, again, one of those weird designs that are not following like the standard way of playing games. Like, oh, this is a deck building, but there's also some other.
No, I don't mind that. I mind the deck building part, which is not fun at all. You get to do it so little in the game. I can't remember. Well, it's such a long time since we played it, but it's like you get one card every now and then into your deck. You can't really like do so much there. And then the rest of the stuff that you're doing is just so much boring compared to the deck building part. When you're getting those contracts.
I do think that this is not your definitely not your traditional deck builder. Like, it should not be called a deck builder, even though you're building your deck.
And even though you're basically playing it as a deck builder.
You're playing as a deck builder, but it's like, there's, again, it's like, it's the weirdness of the design that I think it's like, it's not your average deck building. So if you just judge it as a deck builder, for sure it's not going to be like your traditional Dominion or Lost Ruins of Arnak or Dune Imperium or whatever, like you get to buy at the end of every single turn pretty much. And then you get to make decisions about like, what do I want? What do I trash? How do I build this game? Definitely not that.
Yeah. But then I would say, well, I was not able to find the fun decisions in Oliva. I didn't get like what is supposed to be the fun part.
Yeah. Well, maybe I should bring it fresh.
No. Show me Lata. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So that is my number two, Lata.
My number one is Pictures. Yeah. If you like visual arts at all, you need to buy Pictures. It's this game where you have to figure out how do you express something by using just four sticks and four stones or two shoestrings. We had some truly magical games of this with Chilla's family and friends during our wedding festivities. Also during Christmas. It's in the episode. We did it before Christmas. We released the thing. Then during Christmas, I played Picture for the first time. Had an amazing time.
Mm.
And then, yeah, we also played it. And it's on your list as well. I don't think there's anything I can add to Pictures.
Well, I don't think there's anything I need to add. Great choice for number one.
Yeah, my number one, Pictures.
My number one is Brass Birmingham.
All right.
Yeah, that's why I didn't want to talk too much about it. I just took this game out of the Duster. I've played it many times before, but like I took it to the cottage and then we played with Mia a couple of times during the cottage, just a two-player game. Definitely changed a bit of the dynamic because you're just playing kind of on the bottom of the game of the board and you're just having one person. So definitely the dynamic and the strategies and maybe tactics change a little bit because you don't have that many people that could take maybe your beer or your resources. Mm-hmm. You're just fighting each other, but still fantastic game. As you describe Brass Lancashire, like you get the card and be like, okay, what do I need to do? How can I find the efficiency on this particular puzzle that I have and I need to focus on that? And this game in both of the games I tried to go for pottery, which has like the big points. The second game I got blocked out of pottery and being able to sell pottery because Mia was controlling kind of like the access to the port. And she was like, yeah, I'm not going to build that railroad, so then you cannot sell.
Yeah.
So there was no connection. And she was like, yeah, if you had not told me, then I would not have done it. But then I was like, okay, then I guess pottery is not. So then I tried to pivot and I ended up happily winning the second game. She won handily the first game that we played. So definitely great game. I have the deluxe version with the
poker chips.
Iron clays. I would never play this game. Not with iron clays, because I love playing with the iron clays. I think they match perfectly. The space is where the money goes.
Yep.
It's just such an enjoyable and such a great game that I have not played in a while. That's why also it hasn't been in the list and it just made it to the list. And I'm looking forward to play it more because Mia also super enjoyed it. Yep. So,
yeah, and the poker chips, I think they add lots of usability to the game.
Yeah.
It's not a game where you necessarily need to always see how much money everyone has. At least Sunday, yesterday, I don't think I at any point checked so much. Yeah. Even in Lancashire, that's a little bit more cutthroat, didn't check so much like how much money people have. But between every round, you always readjust the turn order based on who spent the most and you stack the money on those player tokens.
Who spent the most?
They go last. who spent the most.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. I might have misspoke there, but yeah. Basically on the spending, the new turn order. When you have the poker chips there, it's so easy to see, okay, that's the order.
Yeah.
With the cardboard chits, the cardboard coins is a lot harder to see.
Yeah, so that's my number one. A lot of the things that you also said about Brass Lancashire, and I really would like to play Brass Lancashire, but if you don't want to bring it, don't bring it. But that's my number one, Brass Birmingham. There's a reason why it's number one in BGG, man. I know you disagree, and then you would like Brass Lancashire, but Brass Lancashire is what? Number?
It's there.
Number 12?
Yeah, but it's when the Brass Birmingham, since it's now number one, and there's also Brass Lancashire.
It's 23 Brass Lancashire. Yeah.
So it's, of course, when people want to try out these brasses, and they hear, well, this one brass is number one on BGG, this one is 23. Of course, more people are going to pick the Brass Birmingham.
Mm.
And this is just, if you, dear listener, are in the same kind of wondering the same thing, or which brass should I get? I would say get Lancashire. I do think it's the better game, maybe by one tier, I don't know, but not a completely different game. But do understand that the Brass Birmingham is probably number one because the popularity of Brass Birmingham feeds it.
Yeah, feeds definitely.
It. Yeah. And you also asked after you played Brass Birmingham that, hey, Jonas, what was the thing like? Why do you prefer Brass Lancashire?
Yeah.
So just like a quickly, Brass Birmingham has an extra resource called beer. Brass Lancashire doesn't have it. The reason why I don't like beer is because it just feels an extra math puzzle that you have to do to make sure that you can consume your own beer, which is what you most of the time want to do.
Yeah.
So it just feels like, okay, you're going to have this one more puzzle that you have to solve.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't want that. I want to solve the puzzle of like, how can I build this faster than someone else?
Yeah.
And then the second thing is that Brass Birmingham has a little more of those different industry tiles.
Yeah.
Which means that in Brass Lancashire, there will be a competition for shipyards, which are basically the pottery of Lancashire. Those are the things that give you big points. Someone will do them.
Yeah.
And you are not the only one who wants to do them. So there's this always this shipyard game who gets to build them fast and then the other resource games at the same time. So everything is always super, super linked together.
Yeah. So that was my number one. And that was our list. Should we repeat the list?
Maybe we can repeat the list. I can go first.
Yes.
My top 10 was number 10, Exit the Game plus Puzzle, Nightfall Manor. Number 9, Noosefjord Big Box. Number 8, Dark Pact. Number 7, Llama. Number 6, Hitster. Number 5, Race for the Galaxy. Number 4, Maria. Number 3, Sidereal Confluence. Number 2, Brass Lancashire. And number 1, Pictures.
And my top 10 was number 10, Bombusters. Number 9, The Quest for El Dorado. Number 8, Pictures. Number 7, Dirac. Number 6, Hitster. Number 5, Feed the Kraken. Number 4, Tag Team. Number 3, Monikers. Number 2, Lata. And number 1, Brass Birmingham. So Jonas, now we have the list. We also have mentioned different games in the past. Which are the games that didn't make it to your list and why? Games that you have put on the list in the previous two times we have done this list.
Yep, so I have plenty of games that I just did not play in the past 6 months, therefore they were not even eligible. And those games are The Bottle Imp, Tigris and Euphrates, Ra, Mu, that's funny, Ra, Mu, two different games. All Bridges Burning, Sherlock Holmes, Consulting Detective, Seven Empires, and The Guilty series. Here's something I want to say here. The Guilty series is being discontinued.
And the third game is never coming out?
It came out in French. It's not going to come out in English.
You have to learn French?
I have to learn French because I am honestly so sad about this whole ordeal. I do feel that the designers, Johan Servai and Xavier Taverne, created something truly magical with these boxes. Both of the Gilded games have been me and my wife's favorite gaming experiences. The designers tried to generate this cinematic crime-solving experience and they succeeded in it. But maybe there's too many crime games in the market, or maybe too many people tried to play the game as fast as possible, try to fit it into 1 hour, 2 hours, without taking their time with them. Me and Chilla, we played these in 6 hours. We had dinner between the games. But I don't know. I don't know what's the kind of like the forces of the markets that made these games not survive. But I am sad to know that there isn't going to be a third game in the series, at least for now.
Oh.
Yeah. And then two games that I did play, but that did not make it to the list, Junk Art Revolution. I now have history and pictures in this top 10. I could have had Junk Art here as well, maybe, but definitely not above Hitster or Pictures. And I feel a little bit in the same space, a little bit, not fully. Then Kalimala. Kalimala would be my number 12. But we're not doing a top 12.
No.
We're not doing the top 12. And I got to play so many of my absolute favorites in the past 6 months. And I still recommend Kalimala for pretty much everyone to try out.
Many games that have been on the list that I also didn't get to play: Earthbound Rangers, The Lord of the Ring Rule for Middle-Earth, Bonanza, El Grande, Splendor Duel. Splendor Duel, I've been wanting to play multiple times, and we kind of bring it to the table, but then something happens and it never makes it. However, I'm always carrying it. Mia loves it, but just haven't played it. Carnival of Sins, Shall We Dance, John Company Second Edition, Food Chain Magnet, Biblios, Micro Micro, Crime City, and Scroll. All of those games are games that I just didn't get to play in this last half year. All of them, great games. Games that I did play, but I did not put in the list: The Dark Quarter, Pandemic Legacy Season 1, Zubatis, and Regicide. I think Pandemic's Legacy Season 1, Zubatis, Regicide, amazing games. Yes, also top 15 that would have been on the list. Great experiences as well. I got to play them, but I just wanted to make a bit different list this time around. The only odd one out is The Dark Quarter. I didn't enjoy the last couple of plays that we had. It felt that the story is not great.
Okay.
And it felt that also the mechanics of it, I feel that they never play tested this game very well. And I think it has like really good things and it's flashy and it's nice. But then I got tired pretty fast of it. Like there's four chapters in the main campaign. I think by the time we were playing the third chapter, I'm like, yeah, I'm kind of done. I'll lend it to you. You wanted to play it?
Yes.
We can have a discussion about it. But yeah, definitely. Mia really liked it. Like I think she was somehow, I was thinking about putting it on the list just because of that. Like she enjoyed it and we have a good time together. Also because I was just annoyed at the game. So I was just ranting at the game. Why did they do this? And Mia was like, so it also became like kind of a little bit of inside joke.
Yeah.
But yeah, an interesting game. We can have more discussions about it. But yeah, I specifically, it dropped from the list because of that. Like I didn't enjoy it that much anymore. So those are the games that didn't make it to this list. So that was our episode, top 10 or top experiences to talk about and top games to talk about from the first half of 2026. We want to thank you for your time. Our next episode is airing in 2 weeks. In the meantime, you can visit boardgameok.com for more information about the show.
Hello, Ray. Uudestaan.